Sutherland, welcome to Women's Studies. Today we bring you another in a continuing series of readings sponsored by 13th Moon. Today's readers are Marilyn Hacker and Grace Paley.
Survival in adversity is nothing new to our readers today. Poet Marilyn Hacker and fiction writer Grace Paley, both of whom are New Yorkers. Although the tenor of our first reader's work is very cosmopolitan, Marilyn Hacker's poetry draws on particular references to New York. Wordsmith extraordinaire, Marilyn's works works contemporary women's experience into traditional forms with breathtaking ease and clarity. She is the author of three books of poetry, Separations, Presentation Piece, a Lamont poetry selection of the Academy of American Poets, and recipient of the National Book Award for Poetry in 1975, and most recently, Taking Notice. In 1980, she received a Creative Artist Public Service Grant and a Guggenheim Fellowship. Ms. Hacker lives with her daughter, Iva, in New York. For me, the most important aspect of Marilyn Hacker's beautifully crafted work is its courage. Her speaker never denies or conceals the multiplicity of her experience. She is wife, parent, lover, teacher, traveler, observer, friend, feminist, and lesbian. She is all of herself. She is all of us. Please welcome Marilyn Hacker.
Also astigmatic Ashkenazi and with bad teeth. I'd like to open with a poem that will be in the upcoming issue of 13th Moon. It is a pantoum, which is a Malaysian form invented for an oral tradition of poetry, in a form written in quatrains in which the second and fourth lines of each stanza become the first and third ones of the one that follows. So in fact, the poem winds back around itself like the worm Erubarus with its tail and its mouth at the end. Pantoum. There is a serviceable wooden dory rocking gently at the lip of ocean, from where her moor line loops back loosely to an outrider of the wet forest. Rocking gently at the lip of ocean, whorled and rosy carapaces glimmer. To an outrider of the wet forest who kneels at the undulant flat belly, whorled and rosy carapaces glimmer under. The water is a mirror dreaming. Who kneels at the undulant flat belly feels her pulse gyre in the liquid circles. Under the water is a mirror dreaming furled leaves. She kneads and presses her friend's spine, feels her pulse gyre in the liquid circles her palm oils on smooth skin, opening like furled leaves. She kneads and presses her friend's spine, enters her own blood's tide rush, leaves her palm oils on smooth skin. Opening like shrubbery, parting to bare fingers, she enters. Her own blood's tide rush leaves her charged with flammable air, igniting the shrubbery. Parting to bare fingers, she grows, reaches into the fire, licking her, charged with flammable air, igniting the dry tinder and the wet places that flame like brandy. Grows, reaches into the fire, licking her clean that nourishes as it consumes dry tinder. And the wet places that flame like brandy are knowledgeable. They affirm her clean. That nourishes as it consumes detritus of self-doubt, whispers she fears are knowledgeable. They affirm each other in themselves. Still, when the detritus of self-doubt whispers, she fears the empty pool, that secret. They could lose each other in themselves still. When the postcards begin arriving, they depict the empty pool, that secret. They could lose each other in themselves still. When the postcards begin arriving, they depict the empty pool, that secret. They could lose jobs, balance, money, central words, music. Postcards begin arriving. They depict themselves living in a perfect landscape with jobs, balance, money, central. Words, music, one made for the other late at night as they rock themselves. Living in a perfect landscape with passionate friends, you'd ache, she thinks. One made for the other. Late at night as they rocked into incognate languages, were they still passionate friends? You'd ache, she thinks, if your mind buzzed with translations of denial into incognate languages. Were they still anywhere near the hidden rainforest? If your mind buzzed with translations of denial, you might not see the gapping in the hedgerows anywhere near the hidden rainforest a child could push through or a tall woman stooping. You might not see the gapping in the hedgerows at first. She grew up here, points out where a child could push through or a tall woman. Stooping however many shoulder in to the brambles at first. She grew up here, points out where the path mounts damp under eye-high ferns. However many shoulder into the brambles, each one inhales the solitude of climbing. The path mounts damp under eye-high ferns. Cedars aspire to vanishing point in the sky. Each one inhales the solitude of climbing lichenous rocks. In soft perpetual rain, cedars aspire to vanishing point in the sky. Then, sea-stained and enormous, niched for foothold, lichenous rocks in soft perpetual rain. Each, agile or clumsy, silently scales them. Then, sea, stained and enormous, niched for foothold by tide pools, sloshing broken shells and driftwood, each, agile or clumsy, silently scales them to her own size. Boulders embrace the sound. By tide pools, sloshing broken shells and driftwood from where her moor line loops back loosely to her own sides, boulders embrace the sound. There is a serviceable wooden dory. Hard to choose, but sometimes between older and newer work. I think I'll go back and forth between the two. Towards autumn. Mid-September and I miss my daughter. I sit out on the terrace with my friend, talking with morning tea, coffee, and bread about another woman and her mother who survived heroism, her lover who will have to. I surprise myself with language, lacking it, don't like myself much. I owe a letter to my daughter, thinking of hers like thinking of a lover I hope will someday grow to be a friend. I missed the words to make friends with my mother. I pull the long knife through the mound of bread, spoon my slice with cherry preserves, the bread chewy as meat beneath. Remind myself I've errands for our ancient patron, mother of dramas, hard mother to a daughter 20 years my senior, who is my friend, who lives in exile with a woman lover, also my friend, 3 miles from here. A lover of good bread, my present friend leaves this bread and marmalades biscuit. To have a friend a generation older than myself is sometimes like a letter for my daughter to read when she can read. What your mother left undone, women who are not your mother may do. Women who are not your lover love you. That's to myself and my daughter. We take coffee and teapot, mugs, jam jars, bread inside, wash up. I've work, hours by myself. Beyond the kitchen, in her room, my friend writes, overlooking the same hills. Befriend yourself. I couldn't have known to tell my mother that unless I'd learned it for myself. Until I do. Friendship is earned. A lover leaps into faith. Earthbound women share bread, make, do. Cherry compote would please my daughter. My daughter was born hero to her mother, found like a lover, flawed, found like a friend, faithful as bread I'd learned to make myself. It's a rather different kind of poem about a serious political problem that many of us have had to cope with at one time or another. It's called Saturday Night Bile. Multiple relationships. I like waking up mornings in a row, doing it the fifth time in 2 days. Somebody always sounds like a dentist advocating root canal. Multiple relationships, dates to meet, tentative as teenagers, perennial courtship. I don't like courtship. Its pleasures are intense but febrile. I like kitchen pleasures, familiar egg beater, third cup of coffee, not cringing when the phone rings. In one bed, hard to work it, worth it when it works. One in three beds, 12 potential animosities, Saturday night bile. Could I ask, please, that you hold the applause for the end? It's like a kind of loss of energy between things, but thank you anyway. These are from a series that I don't think is really finished yet about my own mother and what went on between her and me. I was born when she was 38, pleated secrets sunlit on a skirt spread over rocks, dark curls, sharp nose, alert shop girl's cautious mouth curve. She had to wait between high school and college, married late, 31, motherless, teenaged, serving father, time, black-frocked at Macy's, deserving Jewish daughter. Patience, her great longings insisted with it, burst. I'll be 38 in November. In her head were words she learned, memorized, accented impeccably out of the Bronx. In the Bronx, she rages, shrunken, pillow-propped in a rank room. I invent freedom at the bank. I invent stories she will never tell. I was fatherless. She was motherless. I thought that I was motherless as well. Harridan, pin-curled in a washed-out house dress, she scrubbed the tiny kitchen on all fours and sniped. I bolted. I told dog walkers as I chipped bark flakes from the sycamore out front such stories. I do not know hers. The mother says, when I was 20, I never thought you, my best friend. I was afraid. Tell me why. I was afraid. Twined down the long wind go fictions, afternoon lies, the nurse tells to a furious old woman who will die. No one is woman to another woman except her mother. Her breasts were unmysterious, naked, limp, small, but I thought pus must ooze from them, her underwear like bandages. Blood came from where I came from, stanched with pads between her legs, under the girdle, seen through gaping bathroom doors. Around her waist, all sorts of rubber, bound to stop the milk, my milk, her breast stayed flat. I watched my round self, guessed a future where I'd droop and leak. But dry and cool against her cheek, I'd lean my cheek. I stroked the lace and serge she sheathed her carapace with, straight skirts, close cuffs, full sleeves, was wordless, catechized, believed. Nude she was gaunt, dressed she was slim. Nude she was flabby, dressed her firm body matched her brisk, precise, mid-continental teacher's voice, which she had molded dry, perfected from a swamp of dialect. Naked or clad for me, she wore her gender, perpetual hador, her individual complex history curtained off by sex. Child, I determined that I would not be subsumed in womanhood. Whatever she was, I was not. Whoever she was, I forgot to ask, and she forgot to tell. Muffled in costume, she as well rejected as a girl, resumed on my account. Are women doomed beasts that repeat ourselves to rage in youth against our own old age, in age to circumscribe our youth with self-despisal dressed as truth? Am I, woman, to my water-dwelling, brown, loquacious daughter, corporeal exemplar of her thirst for what she would not love?
Marilyn Hacker, and I'd really like to thank her for that really powerful, proud, and beautiful reading. Meeting a favorite author can sometimes be a crushing experience. The charming, warm, politically correct person of the page and the lectern can sometimes prove to be an insensitive, egocentric bore. One of the many things about Grace Paley that I so admire is her unpretentiousness, her lack of inflated self-involvement. I had the opportunity of riding down on the subway with her after a local reading, shortly after she had been interviewed by Dick Cavett. What really knocked me out was that Grace was as interested and gracious with me and another admirer as she was with Dick Cavett. She didn't have to be, but she was. And that's what I like, all those extras. America's best short story writer, Grace Paley, is also one of the most politically active creative writers in the country. She is the author of The Little Disturbances of Man and Enormous Changes at the Last Minute. In 1978, she was awarded the Brandeis University Creative Arts Award Citation in Fiction. She teaches creative writing at Sarah Lawrence. Her spare, economical language and the poetic structure of her stories capture this city's ethnic plurality, the pain of assimilation, and the joy and despair that is our lives. Please welcome Grace Paley.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. I'm going to read a couple of stories. can't see with my glasses on, so. This one is called Love. First, I wrote this poem. Walking up the slate path of the college park under the nearly full moon, the brown oak leaves are red as maples. And I have been looking at the young people. They speak and embrace one another. Because of them, I thought I would descend into remembering love. So I let myself down, hand over hand, until my feet touched the earth of the gardens of VC Street. I told my husband, I'd just written a poem about love. What a good idea, he said. Then he told me about Sally Johnson and Lake Winnipesaukee, who was 12 and a half when he was 14. Then he told me about Rosemary Johnson on Lake Sunapee. Then he told me about Jane Marston in Concord High. Then he told me about Mary Smythe of Radcliffe when he was a poet at Harvard. Then he told me about two famous poets, one fair and one dark, both now dead, when he was a secret poet working at an acceptable trade in an office without windows. When at last he came to my time, that is, the past 15 years or so, he told me about Dottie Wasserman. Hold on, I said. What do you mean, Dottie Wasserman? She's a character in a book. She's not even a person. Okay, he said, and why VC Street? What's that? Well, it's nothing special. I used to be in love with this guy who was a shrub buyer. VC Street was the downtown garden center of the city, when the city still had wonderful centers of commerce. I used to walk the kids there when they were little carriage babies, half asleep, maybe take the ferry to Hoboken. Years later, I'd bike down there on Sundays, ride round and round. I even saw him about three times. No kidding, said my husband. How come I don't know the guy? Ugh, the stupidity of the beloved. It's you, I said. Anyway, what's this baloney about you and Dottie Wasserman? Nothing much. She was this crazy kid who hung around the bars, but she didn't drink. Really, it was for the men, you know. Neither did I drink too much, I mean. I was just hoping to get laid once in a while or maybe meet someone and fall in love. He is that romantic. Sometimes I wonder if loving me in this homey life in middle age with two sets of bedroom slippers, one a skin of sandal for summer and the other pair lined with cozy sheepskin, must be a disappointing experience for him. He made a polite bridge over my conjectures. He said, yeah, she was also this funny mother in the park years later when we were all doing that municipal politics, and I was married to Josephine then. Dottie and I were both delegates to that famous Kansas City National Meeting of Town Meetings. NMTM, remember? Some woman. No, I said, that's not true. She was made up, just plain invented in the late 50s. Oh, he said, then it was after that. I must have met her afterwards. He is stubborn, so I dropped the subject and went to get the groceries. Our shrinking family requires more coffee, more eggs, more cheese, less butter, less meat, less orange juice, more grapefruit. Walking along the street, encountering no neighbor, I hummed a little up and down tune and continued jostling time with the help of my nice reconnoitering brain. Here I was, experiencing the old earth of VC Street, breathing in and out with more attention to the process than is usual in the late morning. And all because of love, probably. How interesting the way it glides to solid, invented figures from true, remembered wraiths. By God, I thought, the lover is real. The heart of the lover continues. It has been propagandized from birth. I passed our local bookstore, which was doing well with the joy of all sex underpinning its prosperity. The owner gave me, a dependable customer of poorly advertised books, an affectionate smile. He was a great success. He didn't know that 3 years later, his rent would be tripled, he would become a sad failure, and the landlord, feeling himself brilliant, an outwitting entrepreneur, a star in the microeconomic heavens, he would be the famous success. From half a block away, I could see the kale in the grocer's bin, crumbles of ice shining the dark leaves. In interior counterview, I imagined my husband's northern country fields, the late autumn frost and the curly green. I began to mumble a new poem. In the grocer's bin, the green kale shines. In the North Country, it stands sweet with frost, dark and curly, in a garden of tan hay and light white snow. Light, light. I said that a couple of questioning times. Suddenly, my outside eyes saw a fine-looking woman named Margaret, who hadn't spoken to me in 2 years. We had many years of political agreement before. We had many years of political agreement before some matters relating to the Soviet Union separated us. In the angry months, during which we were both right in many ways, she took away with her, to her political position and daily friendship, my own best friend, Louise, my lifelong PARC, PTA, and anti-war movement sister, Louise. In a hazy litter of love, in a hazy litter of love and leafy green vegetables, I saw Margaret's good face. And before I remembered our serious difference, I smiled. At the same moment, she knew me and smiled. So foolish is the true lover when responded to that I took her hand as we passed, bent to it, pressed it to my cheek, and touched it with my lips. I described all this to my husband at supper time. He was happy to explain everything. The smile was for Margaret, he said. But you know, you miss Louise a lot. And the kiss was for Louise. We both said, ah. Then we looked over the way the SALT treaty looked more like a floor than a ceiling. We read a poem written by one of his daughters, looked at a TV show telling the destruction of the European textile industry, and then made love. In the morning, he said, you're some lover, you know. He said, you really are. You remind me a lot of Dottie Wasserman. Delicate thing there. Okay. Good enough. This story is called The Story Hearer, and part of it's been published somewhere, but most of it hasn't. The reason I call it The Story Hearer, or at least that's what I've been thinking about a lot, is the fact that there's no such thing as a storyteller unless there's a story hearer. And that's why I call it the story hearer. I think I have a lot of philosophy that goes with that, but it really doesn't pay. I'm trying to curb my cultivated individualism, which seemed for years so sweet. It was my own song and my own world, and of course, it may not be useful in the hard time to come. So when Jack said at dinner, what did you do today with your year off? I decided to make an immediate public accounting of the day, not to water my brains with time spent in order to grow smart private thoughts. I said, shall we begin at the beginning? Yes, he said, I've always loved beginnings. Men do, I replied. No one knows if they will ever get over this. Hundreds of thousands of words have been written, some freelance and some commissioned. Still, no one knows. Look here, he said, I like middles too. Oh yes, I know. I questioned him. Is this due to age or the recent proliferation of newspaper articles? I don't know, he said. I often wonder, but it seems to me that my father, who is a decent man, your typical 9-to-5er, seems to me he settled into a great appreciation of the middle. Just about the time my mother said, well, Willie, it's enough, goodbye. Keep the children warm and let him finish high school at least. Then she kissed him, kissed us kids. She said, I'll call you next week, but never did speak to any of us again. Where can she be? Now I've heard that story maybe 30 times and I still can't bear it. In fact, whenever I've made some strong adversary point in public, Jack tells it to grieve me. Sometimes I begin to cry. Sometimes I just make soup immediately. Once I thought, oh, I'll iron his underwear. I've heard of that being done, but I couldn't find the cord. I haven't needed to iron in years because of famous American science, which gives us wash and wear in one test tube and nerve gas in the other. Its right test tube doesn't know what its left test tube is doing. Oh, yes, it does, says Jack. Therefore, I want to go on with the story, or perhaps begin it again. Jack said, what did you do today with your year off? I said, my dear, in the late morning, I left our apartment. The Times was folded on the doormat of 1A. I could see that it was black with earthquake, war, and private murder. Clearly, death had been successful everywhere, but not, I saw, when I stepped out the front door on our own block. Here it was springtime, partly because of the time of the year, and partly because we have a self-involved, block-centered street association, which has lined us with sycamores and enhanced us with a mountain ash, two ginkgos, and here and there, because we are part of the whole, Iolanthus, city saver. I said to myself, what a day. I think I'll run down to the store and pick up some comestibles. I actually thought that. Had I simply gone to the store without thinking, the word comestible would never have occurred to me. I would have imagined, hungry, supper, nighttime, Jack, greens, cheese, store, walk, street. But I do like this language, wheat and chaff, with its widening pool of foreign genes. And since I never have had occasion to say comestible, it was pleasurable to think it.